Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
Yes, thanks for joining us Friday. We've got a double dip of me today because even though I haven't talked to Krug yet, I know we're doing bottom of the pint tonight. It is Webb versus Yamamoto, and it's Dodgers v. Giants. And if the Giants didn't blow a lead, Randy Rodriguez, who's still been very good. Great, maybe. That's going to happen to your bullpen, but it would have been nice to have those 28 losses and be tied with the Dodgers and all that kind of stuff. But it's not that big of a deal as the Dodgers and Giants go at it for a weekend series. And I've told you this, I think it's important. I know there's 162 games in a season, and not often do we say this is an important series, but I think this is an important series tonight, and so we'll get into that conversation. Welcome up, and it is episode 164, John Lund Unleashed. If you're new around here, Many years in sports radio, about 30 years to be exact, and about the last 15 or so in the Bay Area, pre and post for the 49ers for a number of years, and did lots of Giants coverage and Warriors and all sorts of stuff, and have been all over the country and done ESPN radio. Used to do for a few years, actually, with Larry Kruger, the wrap-up show on ESPN Game Night on Sunday. So been around, seen that, done that, been to a lot of different places and seen a lot of different fans. So I try to give you that perspective every day. Well, at least 6 days a week, Monday through Friday. And then tomorrow we'll do a 10 o'clock Saturday show. But trying to give you some great perspective on everything. And so it is episode 164. Please make sure before we go down the chalkboard and say good morning to everybody that you are, you're subscribed, first and foremost. You're subscribed to John Lund Unleashed. That would be outstanding, and we really appreciate that. So John Lund Unleashed, if you would subscribe to the channel, that would be great. Please hit us with the like before you get out of here today. If you are on YouTube, that would be great. That helps the algorithm as well. And make sure you have those alerts on. We had a few things out yesterday as well, so make sure you get that so you don't miss anything on the show. The big B in the left-handed corner, BSC, that's Bay Area Sports Collective. So it's me and Tom Tolbert and Rod Brooks and Polly Mack and Creative Tony, lots of guys who were with KNBR. Then we added Amy G, obviously, great Giants coverage, and she's got a great podcast about women in media, which is very cool. And then former Giants pitcher Jeremy Affelt is here too. So make sure, and we're adding all the time, make sure that you subscribe to the Bay Area Sports Collective, have the alerts on so we know when all the shows are on the Bay Area Sports Collective. Good morning to those watching on Instagram. That's at John Lund Radio. You can follow me there. On X, makes it really easy. Twitter X. I don't think we have to call it Twitter anymore. Everybody knows it's called X now. But on X, at John Lund Radio, if you're there, you could come on over here. That would be nice. You could be watching on LinkedIn today or Facebook, both my personal page, John Lund, and John Lund and Lee. So we can be friends there if you would like. So that's what's going on today. And thank you for making time for the show on this Friday. Very quickly, before we get one more thing before the chalkboard and the intros this morning, that is Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. Those pair of legs that you see below me and right now in the QR code, my wife, I've told you this many times, Lainey, she has had elbow issues, shoulder issues, foot. She just went in and had another stem cell procedure done with her foot. It's simple, it's easy, and Dr. Reappell was one of the first in California to use stem cell, and it's like magic. I'm telling you, that's not a technical term, and he says, but watch what you say about it. And I understand, but for my wife, I'm just telling you from personal experience and seeing it, her shoulder, her elbow, she's not icing all the time like she used to be. I've told you this a few months ago. We were in Vegas walking all around. We were in Arizona a couple of weeks ago on business, walking all around. So it has been really a miracle for her. So click on that QR code right there with Dr. Reappell and get yourself an appointment today. Now, if you did not get to the QR code, all you got to do, Reappell, just look it up on your favorite search engine, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell in San Ramon. And he is 100% worth the drive if you're coming from somewhere else. If you're in the East Bay, it's an absolute no-brainer. I do the low T. I've done that for years, but about, I don't know, a year, 18 months ago, started doing it with Dr. Reappell. And it's awesome because we do one quick blood test. He gets me to the level I need to be, not anything over, nothing crazy. He's a doctor, people. And then it, for months, the procedure, not every week, but for months, then I feel a lot better. And I was just in there a couple of weeks ago, and it's just, it's awesome. You feel like yourself again. So check out Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, because not only does he do those procedures, he does plenty of other procedures to make you feel good, to make you look good, for men, for women. So check it out. Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, right there in San Ramon. Please tell him I sent you over, and he will make it extra special for you. All right, the Giants blow it in episode 164. I'm not pissed at the bullpen. It's been the best in baseball. It's going to happen. You're in Colorado. I get it. Dom is working. That's Dom Smith. He hit his first home run as a Giant, and it was a no-doubter. He's hitting about 320. It's a small sample size. I get it. But Lamont Wade Jr. wasn't doing those things. And as Bob Melvin said yesterday in the post-game press conference, they're just professional at-bats. He said he doesn't think he's had a bad at-bat yet. I mean, I can think of one or two. His first one as a Giant, I think he grounded out meekly and weakly. But I get his point, which is these are professional at-bats. This is how they should look. Now, does that mean that I think he's going to assume the position for the rest of the year? I don't know that I'd say that. But certainly he is doing something, and it is much better than what was happening before at first base. So we'll hold our breath on that. Great pitching matchup tonight between the Dodgers and the Giants. Yamamoto versus Webb. We shall discuss. Can the Giants hang? We're going to find out this weekend. It was in Colorado, but Colorado scored 20 runs. The pitching's got to be better, but I know it's Colorado, so you give them a break. The mean San Francisco fans update. I think this is kind of funny. Played this for you yesterday with Mookie Betts and Jackson Merrill saying, Giants fans are mean. So I have a little bit of an update on that as well. Andrew Vaughn was traded, the former Cal Bear that was a hitting machine in college, won the Golden Spikes Award, all that kind of stuff. Third overall pick by the White Sox, and he gets traded. We'll discuss triple A numbers. That means who's raking down at triple A, and there's a couple of interesting things that they're doing, moving some River Cats around, which may give you a preview of where they may play them if and when they're needed during this long season for the Giants. A Lynch BA update, which is what I have on the cover of the show today. You see right there, optimistic injury update. Three cuts from the Pat McAfee show yesterday with John Lynch that I think are all very interesting and worth discussion, and random things happen throughout the show. I do have one small, I'm not going to oversell it. Sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol. It's just a weird thing. I'm not going to oversell that thing. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, I'm just simply saying that it's okay. It's an okay one. I'm not going to oversell you something. It's just an okay one that I think is strange and I need to ask you a question about. So that's what's going on as far as today's show, episode 164. Today's Friday the 13th. Today's Friday the 13th. I am not superstitious. Wasn't much of an athlete, obviously, but, you know, stepping on lines or doing all those kind of things or whatever. I'm not superstitious. I believe in certain things. I would say I'm spiritual. I would not say that I am certainly not superstitious. I'm just not. Friday the 13th, if something happens, black cats walking under ladders, those kind of things. I don't know. It's just not me. But I do know a lot of athletes that are. So, but I am not. But happy Friday the 13th. And happy early Father's Day, by the way, to all the great fathers out there. Father's Day this Sunday. And we've already got a nice brunch set up. And I'm a brunch person. Like, if I put everything in order as far as what I like, I'm a big breakfast guy. Like, love, love, love breakfast. I'm probably putting that near the top. I probably put brunch first and then breakfast and then dinner. And I eat a bar for lunch. I don't eat, lunch is like, whatever, you know, lunch is like, okay. The only time I ever go out for lunch is like, I don't know. I can't even remember the last, like, actual lunch. I'm not really a big lunch guy. I do love sandwiches though. Like, there's a couple of really nice sandwich joints by my house, and it's not that I'm anti sandwich. Love a good sandwich. In fact, I might go out and get a sandwich today. But I'm not a huge lunch guy. You give me breakfast, you give me brunch, I am down. And so my wife knows. She doesn't have to get me anything. I don't need socks or underwear or a tie or anything like that. I haven't worn a tie since 1974. But I mean, you know, brunch, take me to brunch, get a couple of cocktails going. Nice. That's what we're doing this Sunday. So that's very, very nice. Wonder what you're doing. Hope everything is good. All right. Good morning, too. Bucko Sports is here. We're looking in the chat room if you're in one of the other places that you're watching. What are you talking about? We're on the YouTube chat here in John Lund Unleashed and saying good morning to everybody today. Bucko Sports is here. Joy is here. Dom, it's great to see you, my friend. We are doing a bottom of the pint tonight. Mark, welcome back again. Something weird happened, but Mark is back. Papa J is here, which is absolutely great. The 1420. Danny, good morning from the Valley. What else do we have? JJ Raider is here today. Did I say the Nutter? I told you it's not a show unless the Nutter is here. Good morning to Jake. Lots of people in the room today. Hi, Scott. It is great to see you, man. We haven't seen Scott. We see you every once in a while, but it is nice to see you, my friend. So anyway, happy Father's Day to everybody. Happy Friday. Happy Friday the 13th. Let's get going. In fact, you know what? Let's just start right here, man. If you 100% want to get your questions, comments, thoughts on the show, all you got to do is hit me up with a super, and it supports the show. And yes, we are still supporting the Uber and George's. I'm paying double rents, by the way, which I'm not complaining. It's just he has a place now that he's got to, you know, he's on Cape Cod, which I should show you the back. Basically the place he's living is backing up to the, you're living better than I am, and it's not fair. I don't know. Oh, it's, I got to get a text. I got to look at his text. I said, you're living better than I am, and it's just not fair. So let's see if I can see this. Okay. So that's what his house that he's living in backs up to this lake on the Cape. And then let me give you the other one. Oh, and then this is just walking distance. No big deal. Let me see. Yeah, right there to that beach. It's like he can walk to that beach. So I'm like, really? Oh, sorry. I'm not playing the video of it. There you go. Yeah, that's not too bad. So anyway, yeah, he's living up the high life, which I just paid for. And then I'm paying for his Arizona digs as well, because, you know, you can't lose that house. It's 110 degrees down there. And it's like you still got to pay that. So any and everything is absolutely appreciated. Bottom of the pint, Fuji. Good morning to Fuji. Bottom of the pint still on for tonight. Absolutely. I wouldn't miss it. In fact, if crew can't do it, I think I'd have to do it solo, because we cannot miss Yamamoto versus Webb, Dodgers versus Giants. Giants won back in the loss column, which should have been tied, but whatever. One back in the loss column. We have got to 100% do a bottom of the pint. And if you don't know what that is, Larry Kruger and I from the Krug Show on YouTube does a great job, especially with his 49ers coverage. But him and I get together. We're old friends. We've known each other for years and years and years. In fact, I talk about my son George all the time. He's 21, writing baseball on the Cape this summer. He was a coach of my son, ironically enough, on the Dodgers, but Krug wouldn't wear the Dodgers hat. It was funny. So Krug was on KNBR. I was on 95.7 The Game. I just moved here 15 years ago or so. And I didn't know him. And we actually lived, we didn't realize this, but we lived in subdivisions across from each other. My son was on his baseball team and he was the coach, and it was the Dodgers. And he wouldn't wear the Dodgers hat because people were going to take, you know, phone pictures of it and send it and be like, oh, Krug's a Dodgers fan. So he wouldn't wear that Dodgers hat. But he coached my son like his first or second year in baseball when he was like 6 or 7. So that's how long I've known Krug. And so we do the show together. We used to do the ESPN National Recap Show on ESPN Radio on game night on NFL. So we've done shows together. We've been opposite each other. We've been on the same station together. So I've known Krug for 15 or so years. We have a great time doing the show. So it's a live giant show during the games. And we just do commentary as the game is going on. And we try to, one of our main rules when we started to do this, because I didn't want to on a Friday night, you know, I'm giving up the Friday night anyway. My wife's none too happy about that, but I just didn't want to go in there and be angry and bitter and blah, blah, blah. And they've had such a nice season that you'd rarely have to do that. But we try to, the only rule in there is we try to be positive, and we suck down some beers and, you know, and eat some stuff and act like we're at the ball game and everything. But we just have a great time. And everybody seems to enjoy it. It continues to grow and grow and grow. And anyway, so we'll do that tonight for Dodgers and Giants. All right. As far as the show is concerned, man, we just did 13 minutes on a lot of stuff, but not the episode. So let's get into this whole thing. I'm not angry about last night. I mean, they gave up a lot of runs to, I'll share my screen with you. They gave up too many runs to their Rockies. That's what you do. It's difficult to do. It's difficult to pitch in that park. Everybody knows that. So not great. I mean, they're up in that ball game, what, 7-2 at one point. You're thinking to yourself, well, this bullpen's not going to blow that. A couple of positive things out of the whole thing, even though Willy Adames is hitting 204, hit well in that ballpark, hit a couple of home runs. Maybe that gets him out of it. I'm not overly optimistic, but we shall see. Mike Yastrzemski kind of back on the roller coaster up part of it. Dom Smith hit his first home run. Look at that. A few hits, few RBIs, hit his first home run, and it was a no-doubter. Casey Schmidt, as I told you a couple of days ago, I'm sure Bob Melvin went to him and just said, look, man, you got a runway here, and you're going to play third base, and you're going to be our guy, even if you commit an error, like he did yesterday, which, depending on your opinion, may have cost him the game. He's been so good defensively that I don't even think about him, but the error he made late in the game was a major problem and made these pitchers throw extra pitches. That's what it just came down to. As far as the pitching is concerned, Hayden Birdsong was solid enough. Again, those numbers in Colorado, you give up 3/6, which is considered a quality start. All of us kind of look at it and go, that's not a quality start. In Colorado, it is. Sean Gelly was really good last year, has been up now a little bit, was not good yesterday. Again, it's Colorado, but I'll keep an eye on you because the rest of the bullpen's been so good. Eric Miller continues to do his things. Ryan Walker is hit and miss, but he was fine yesterday. And then it's just too bad because I've been advocating for Randy Rodriguez to be the closer. He's been so dominant. He wasn't his normal self. There's no question about it. But also, he didn't get a whole lot of help from his defense. There's just no other way to put it. So when you see right there in the fifth after the Smith home run, it's 7-2. You're thinking, all right, they're going to sweep this thing, which is what they should do. They're going to have 28 losses. They're going to go into LA tied. This is going to be great. And then there's Tyro right there in the seventh, but it was more the ninth inning right there. You just say they grounded into the fielder choice to third. Schmidt's got to make that play. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. Schmidt's got to make that play. If he does, they probably win the game. And then Arcia comes up a little bit later, game-winning hit, and they lose 8-7. So I'm not pissed at Randy Rodriguez. I've shown you the numbers in the Giants game notes, what they are when they lead after 6, 7, and 8 innings. I mean, it's just an astronomical number and the best in baseball. You're going to screw up sometimes. And if you're going to screw up and you're Randy Rodriguez, it's probably going to be in Colorado. And you look at the amount of pitches, 43. Bob Melvin again said after the game, it was huge that Hayden Birdsong gave him 6 because they used everybody. And this is my big thing long-term about the Giants. You go into a place like Colorado, you have a 7-2 lead. You shouldn't have to use Jelly and Miller and Walker and Rodriguez to win that game. It's a difficult place to pitch, no doubt, but you should be able to get that done. And the reason why Rodriguez had to throw so many pitches is they didn't have Duvall. He wasn't available yesterday. So it was all on Rodriguez. He had not pitched in Colorado before. He was not sharp, but he didn't get any help from his defense. So it's an unfortunate loss. I'm not going to put an asterisk by it, but when the Rockies are 13-55 and 7-27 at home, 2 out of 3 is not good enough against Colorado. If you want to be in this divisional race, 2 or 3 isn't, you know, I'm not playing the blame game here. It's up. You're up 7-2 against a team that is already ready to pack it in. They don't really, I mean, it might as well be, you know, September for them. I mean, they're just ready to pack it in, pack it up, pack it in. So they're ready to be done. And you give them a little bit of a spark. And then, like I said, the ninth inning didn't turn out well defensively. That's surprising. Chapman makes that play probably, and they end up winning that game. There's no question. But if I'm Bob Melvin, there's two things I'm doing after this game. One, I'm going to Randy Rodriguez going, no big deal, dude. No big deal. What it means tonight that he had to throw 43 pitches, and this is part of the problem. He can't pitch tonight. He threw 43 pitches. So Randy Rodriguez is going to get a break tonight. Hopefully they don't need him against the Dodgers. You would think they would. It would have been nice with that 7-2 to get a couple more runs and not have to use as many bullpen arms as you did going into L.A., taking on the Dodgers. And hopefully Logan Webb tonight, this is huge for the Giants. Another 6-7 inning outing now against this offense. Is that too much to ask? It kind of is. But you had to use so many arms and you had to use Rodriguez for so long last night, so many pitches, I should say. That you got to give your bullpen a break. And this is what Logan Webb does. So it'd be nice if he could give you 7 against the Dodgers. I don't know how realistic that is, but that's what the Giants need. But I'm sure Bob Melvin went to Randy Rodriguez and said, hey, man, you just got rocky. That's just what happened. It happens in Colorado. Don't worry about it. Hopefully his confidence doesn't wean. I don't think it will. And then the second part of it is, you know, you play up Hayden Birdsong and go, dude, you just gave us a quality start in 6 innings in a place that's really hard to do. So I think he continues to get better and better and better and gives me optimism. Robbie Ray wasn't himself. That's Colorado. So I'm not worried about it. They gave up a lot of runs in this series. That's just what happens. The Rockies aren't very good. But like I said, when a team's 13-55 and 7-27 at home, you just can't give them that hope like they did. And so hopefully that doesn't snowball into something like a sweep here because you're right on the Dodgers' tail. You're feeling really good about things. Should have had the win yesterday. No big deal. These are professionals. That's what they do in baseball. Next day, next game, next day, next game. That's just the way it goes. But tonight is a huge, I'm going to call it a huge start. And I know there's 162 games in a season, but this is a huge start for Logan Webb. Be nice to get the win, shake off that loss. Be nice to give the bullpen a bit of a rest. And let's see what a guy like Dom Smith, who's off to a really nice start, and he hits the long home run in Colorado yesterday. Let's see what else he can do. Because I'm going to get down to Andrew Vaughn in just a second. Bryce Eldridge hit another home run yesterday, so we'll continue to talk about those things. But the Giants blow it. That is number one. Dom working. I kind of talked about that. I mean, again, very small sample size, but hitting 320 in just a handful of games with the Giants and hit a monstrous home run. So far, so good for Buster, picking him out of the Yankees chain, off the Yankees AAA team. He had an out for June 1, took it, and so far, so good. We'll see, because Bryce Eldridge, even though he hit a home run, and we can get into AAA numbers in just a second, he's hitting 138. Again, small sample size, but he's hitting 138. Now, as far as Yamamoto and Webb are concerned, I mean, this is just an awesome matchup tonight. And like I said, we're doing bottom of the pint. And I think Krug's going to do it. Hang on one sec. I think Krug is going to be with us tonight. I have not talked to him, but I would imagine he's going to be. Because if we're going to do bottom of the pint, this is the number one game of the year. This is Yamamoto. This is Webb. This is Dodgers Giants. The Giants are actually in this thing. Let me pop the standings up real quick. I mean, let's go, people. You know, that was a bad loss yesterday. There's no doubt about it. But still, 7-3 in your last 10, 40-29. You get a win tonight. You're 41-29. They're 41-29, and you're at a dead heat. Talked about the Padres. They're right there. Like I told you, I look at losses. Keeping an eye on Arizona with the loss of their big free agent signing, Corbin Burns, if they can keep it going. And then the Rockies aren't even relevant, and they shouldn't have won that game yesterday. But there you go. That's what the standings look like. So it would have looked better at 41-28, and they would have been in a dead heat, but they're one back, and that's not that big of a deal. So there you go. There's the standings as we go into tonight's game. And I did talk a little bit about Yamamoto and Webb. Like I said, it's not only important that they get the win, it's important after you just saw those relievers that they used and Randy Rodriguez threw 43 pitches. They have got to give the bullpen a break. So that's where we are as far as the game last night and the game today is. Can the Giants hang in the middle of the chalkboard there? Can the Giants hang? That's what we're going to find out here, because it's one thing to go to Colorado and do what they did, and they should have had the sweep and score all those runs, and Willie Adames is feeling great. But I thought to myself as I prepared for the show is, you know, we're at the point where we're almost through 100 games, right? We're almost through 100 games. We're getting close. And or halfway through the season, I should say, not 100 games, halfway through the season. And so I'm thinking to myself, if you can do it for half the season, there's no reason you can't do it for the rest of the season. I've said this a couple of times this week. They're going to have to trade for a stick. And if they don't want to give the division away to the Dodgers, and why should they? They've hung this long, this far, this long. So what are they going to do at the deadline? And that's where these names keep coming up. And this is where I'm going to jump down to Vaughn traded for a minute. Then I'm going to come back and do the SF mean fans update. But Andrew Vaughn, the former Cal Bear, was traded, and he won the Golden Spikes, and he was the third overall pick of the draft. And he actually had, you know, some I wouldn't say good seasons, but, you know, it was optimistic. I mean, like, okay, the guy can play. Never going to be a great defender, but DH, first base type, right-handed stick. I know the Giants want to balance out the lineup, so maybe he wasn't a guy that they were going to look at. But the Brewers had a pitcher that had fallen out of the rotation, was upset, and he wanted to get traded. Now, he probably did not want to get traded to the White Sox, but okay, he got traded to the White Sox. Andrew Vaughn goes to the Brewers. And essentially he was going to be DFA'd anyway, so the Brewers thought to themselves, well, why not just pick up a first baseman in Andrew Vaughn, former, you know, Cal Bear that's very highly thought of. Let's see what the guy can do. Now, what's interesting about that to me is twofold. Number one, I wonder if the Giants did look into an Andrew Vaughn, because he has the second worst OPS of anyone this year. The last of any hitters this year, the last time I looked at Andrew Vaughn's numbers, and I didn't this morning, he was hitting like .177. I mean, he made Lamont Wade Jr. look like an all-star. Okay, I wouldn't go that far. But still, so I wonder if that was somebody that the Giants looked into, because clearly at Cal, sure, they saw him play. He was a top three pick in the Major League Baseball draft, so you'd think that was somebody that they'd look at. You're definitely, if he's a stock, you're buying low as hell. I mean, you're buying that in the toilet. And the Brewers just grabbed him, not because they need him, but because they're like, well, here's a former highly thought of guy. We're going to DFA this pitcher anyway. Let's see if we can jumpstart this guy. Now, the interesting part beyond did the Giants make a call, if the Brewers start tumbling a little bit, Vaughn comes over to Milwaukee and he starts hitting a little bit, all of a sudden the Brewers are going, well, you know what? Then we have an expendable person in Rhys Hoskins. And to me, that's the guy I've wanted all along at first base. Now, we can talk about O'Hearn and Stowers and all these different guys that are having career years that the Giants would possibly give up too much for, and then they go back to their ways of what they've been because they're journeyman players for a reason, having a career season that makes me really nervous to trade for guys like that. But that's what the Giants may have to do with the deadline. Or they could look at a guy like Rhys Hoskins who's done it on a winning team. So if Vaughn goes over to Milwaukee and he starts hitting a little bit, Milwaukee kind of hits the skids a little bit, and they think to themselves, well, we got a player option on him anyway next year. We're a smaller market team. The rest of the year, while it's not a ton of money to a major market team, he had an $18 million contract. So we're getting close to the midway point of the season. So now that's down to nine. That shouldn't be huge for the Giants. They kind of act small market, medium market, but they're not. But that's not too much. They're under the line by quite a bit. That would be a decent savings for Milwaukee to have. They put Andrew Vaughn at first base, and maybe Rhys Hoskins becomes a Giant. I don't know. A lot would have to happen because I just gave you the NL West standings, but the overall standings, Milwaukee's in this thing. And so they're not moving anybody, and Milwaukee's not that type of team. Doesn't matter who they lose. They lose a Corbin Burns to Baltimore. They seem to be fine. They lose a Willie Adames to the Giants. They seem to be fine. Like on and on and on. They're just one of those organizations because they draft and develop so well that they seem to be fine, even though they're small market and they have had a lot of people leave the organization. A lot of really good players over the last number of years leave the organization. They still are in the middle of everything. Chicago seems to be the class of the Central. The Cardinals are up there as well. So Milwaukee has an uphill fight, there's no doubt, and that's for a wild card, let alone what's going on in their own division. I think Chicago, for sure, because of that offense, they are 100% legit. I don't know what's going on with Milwaukee, but I think if they hit the skids, put in Andrew Vaughn, see what Andrew Vaughn can do, former well-thought-of prospect, and they move on. And they get some pitching probably for Rhys Hoskins. And the Giants match up. They've got some pitching depth within the organization. So we'll see what happens on the Vaughn thing. But it's twofold. It's did they ever make a call to buy low on him? And two, Vaughn now goes to Milwaukee. If they start hitting the skids, will they put him at first base to see what he's all about and trade Hoskins? We shall see. All right, let's get to the SF fans mean update. Before I do that, let's say good morning to everybody. Oh, we got another super. Again, you want to get your thoughts on the screen 100%. Supers are a great way to do it and contribute to the show at the same time. Adrenaline had him all over throwing yesterday. I did not see that. I see what you're saying. Randy Rodriguez is adrenaline. Yeah, absolutely. 100% Mark, and it is 100% great to have you back. I think it was twofold yesterday. I think that he hadn't pitched there. I mean, Bob Melvin said that. I'll take everybody's word for it because everybody talks about the break and the ride on the fastball and all the different things. And, you know, maybe it wasn't doing what he thought he wanted it to do. And like you said, and then he's in a closer role, which is something Bob Melvin said he had done in the minors but hadn't done at the major league level. And I don't care what Billy Beane says because Billy Beane always downplayed the role of the closer and would always, obviously, with the A's, trade his closer and try to get something for him. He did it all through his career with the A's. He thought anybody could go in there and close, and it's just not the same. All due respect to Billy Beane, who knows a hell of a lot more about baseball than I do, but there is a difference. There is a mental side of it. You know, 2 minutes left in a game. Some guys step up, some guys don't. You know, that's what it is. A closer is on the mound basically by himself, go save the game or go, you know, win us the game or however you want to do it, close the game. It's different. Seventh, eighth, ninth, different. The bats are different. Certain guys step up, certain guys don't. We talk about this all the time. That's why certain guys are thought of the way that they are, because they either hit shots, get hits, close out, whatever the case may be, and other guys just can't do it. You know, we've seen it. And so it's not that I don't think Randy Rodriguez eventually can do it. It was just he was put in a tough spot in Colorado to do it. So I'm not down on him at all. But a great point by you, Mark. The Nutta. What are your thoughts on Otani joining the Dodgers rotation? Yeah. Thanks for that one, Nutter. I said this at the beginning of the year. Look, they have a really good rotation, but you know, Yamamoto threw 90 pitches. Glasnow always gets hurt. Snell seemingly always gets hurt. So everybody was sitting there just singing the praises. I mean, Dustin May is back, but he's certainly not the pitcher that he was before all the injuries. Took a couple of years off his career. He looked like he was very, very promising, and he's going to pitch in this series. and he's still, you know, he's still got really nasty stuff. So maybe he gets back on point. But between all of those guys, there's a ton of injuries there. And until, you know, athletes hate this, and so does management when you bring it up to them. They hate when you call someone injury prone, but I don't know what else you can call some of these guys. Blake Snell is injury prone. Dustin May is injury prone. Tyler Glasnow is injury prone. That's just what they do. You know, the greatest indicator of the future is the past. And those guys, that's their past. They get hurt a lot. But what the Dodgers will do, and the difference is, they'll go out 100%, and whomever is available, they will spare no expense to go get that player, because all they think about is winning. They won it last year. They don't care. They're going to try to win it again. So it's not, you know, they're not going to be a team that says, geez, we're not going to tear up our farm system because we won it last year. And for some reason, I don't know how the hell they do it. And I hate heaping praise on them. But while the Giants in the latest, I think ESPN farm rankings were like 29th, there's the Dodgers at one. Wait a minute. The Dodgers are making a trade at the deadline every freaking year. How are they one? And even guys we forget that they traded for. I mean, go back years. I mean, Scherzer and Turner and Manny Machado and Mac, you know, all these different guys, you know, you're like, what are you, Darvish? Like, what? Like, they're constantly bringing guys in, and very rarely are they getting burned. Like, who's the guy that the Dodgers moved that you went, damn, they shouldn't have moved that guy? I mean, Josiah Gray made an all-star team because Washington needed to have an all-star. But, I mean, they've traded highly thought-of prospects who are just okay. Versus, like, the Padres in the Juan Soto trade, like James Wood, he's going to be an all-star this year. Like, can you imagine if they had that guy? Like, and under team control? Like, you can't panic, especially as a smaller market team. Like, if the Padres had put James Wood in the lineup for the Padres right now, because they lost Soto. And I know Michael King came back and they had a number of guys, but I'd still rather have James Wood right now than anybody else. Mackenzie Gore was in that trade. I mean, they gave up a lot in that trade. The Dodgers make trades every freaking year. And a lot of times for big names, they got Jack Flaherty last year who pitched well for them. And they were so low, you know, they were so out of pitching that they did those kind of things, and they never seemed to get burned by it. There's no Zach Wheeler for the Dodgers. There's probably one that I'm not thinking of, but they generally they'll make that trade, and they have the farm system again and again and again to do it. So they'll make a trade for pitching. I'm just wondering if the people who control the purse strings for the Giants will do the same thing. And they don't need just one bat. I think they need two. But your question is Ohtani joining the rotation. If I was the Dodgers, I'd be scared as hell of that. I would. The guy, Aaron Judge, is overtaking him right now as the best player in baseball. Aaron Judge is having a ridiculously good season. But, you know, those guys flip back and forth. 1-2-2-1, whatever. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Judge is having a better season now. But Judge and Ohtani are the top two offensive players in the game. And now I'm the Dodgers, and I'm going to put this guy in the mound. I understand you paid him a lot of money. Well, you deferred him a lot of money to do both, and I'm sure he wants to do both, but sometimes you got to save the player from themselves. And if I'm the Dodgers right now, I'm going, I got one of the best hitters, top two hitters in the game, and I'm going to put him on the mound. Like, he's really good, don't get me wrong, but as good as he is as a hitter, he's about 80% of that as a pitcher. He's a really good pitcher, but, you know, he's not like Yamamoto is. Like, Yamamoto's their best pitcher. I don't see Ohtani being that, especially after a couple of Tommy John surgeries. And if I were the Dodgers, I don't know if this is less or more torque. I don't know if I wouldn't make him a closer rather than a, you know, 6 or 7 inning guy. But if I'm the Dodgers, I almost don't want to rock the boat. You know, like, this guy has been so good for me offensively. Do I want to make him a pitcher? Do I want to have him do that? You know, is that going to take away all that wear and tear? Is that going to take away from, you know, him being the great hitter that he is? Yeah, I don't know. So there's something to be said for that, because if I'm the Dodgers, I don't know if I don't rock the boat, but yet I don't think Ohtani will be enough. I guess to your point, I think they're going to go out and get another pitcher. I mean, I think Ohtani helps them if he's the pitcher he was for a lot of those years with the Angels, but I still think they need another one because they have unreliable arms. They have guys who are injured a lot. I mean, Tony Gonsolin, I think, is on the injured list now for a long time. I mean, they got a lot of injuries, and I'm not saying that the Dodgers aren't the team to beat in the West. They are. It's just that when everybody already anointed them, I was like, that staff's going to get hurt, because that's what that staff has always done. So anyway, great question. All right, let's get to this update on the whole thing from yesterday. Played this for you. I'm sure you saw this on a podcast, and I played it for you yesterday. So This is Mookie Betts and Jackson Merrill. Mookie Betts of the Dodgers, who no longer plays in the outfield, and then Jackson Merrill of the Padres. And here they are saying that San Francisco Giants fans are mean. I got an update on this.
They're all like Little League gross, yeah, you know? You drive a Prius, your shoes untied.
Yeah, whatever.
I say San Fran got some mean people out there, though.
San Fran mean people out there, bro.
People say Wrigley and Yankee Stadium is bad. Bro, San Fran is like...
Well, that could be because the rivalry, because Yankee Stadium is bad.
From my perspective,
Yankee Stadium is probably...
Dude, San Fran's mean though.
San Fran.
They get in on you.
Yeah, both of them. Both of those guys. They're probably neck and neck.
Okay. All right. So that's what they say. They're in the outfield. I'm not. But I said this yesterday, and I did a little short on this. I've been to just about every ballpark. I've been to every ballpark that those guys have mentioned. I've been to Wrigley Field numerous times. I've been to Fenway a few times. Been to probably 100 Giants games. Been to both old Yankee Stadium, new Yankee Stadium. Where else is supposed to be nasty? Been to Pittsburgh, been to Philadelphia. Philadelphia blew my mind. I think I've told this story before. Jimmy Rollins, I was with a friend of mine from Philly. And we go to a random like Tuesday night game or something. And we have pretty good seats. And we're down kind of low. And Jimmy Rollins, Oakland zone, he had two or three hits on the night. Had driven in a couple of runs. Had a really nice night. And came up with... I think they were down by a run in the ninth inning, and he didn't end the game, but he was like the first or second hitter. He grounds out to like second or short or something, and he, you know, jogs down to first, and he's going into the dugout, and they're booing him. I'm like, the dude was like 2 for 5 in the night with a couple of RBIs, and I'm thinking, and he's their regular shortstop. He hadn't committed an error, didn't do anything stupid, didn't like not run to first base. So I was like, what the hell? I turned to my friend and go, why are they booing him? Like, he didn't get a hit in the ninth inning. I'm like, he has 2 hits and a couple of RBIs. Like, what's he supposed to do? I mean, he's like hitting 400 on the night with a couple of ribbies. And he's like, man, that's just what they do here, man. So we're not that. We're not that at all. I mean, I would have been, if Lamont Wade Jr. If he was in on the East Coast or the Midwest, he couldn't even go out on the field. Like, he couldn't even do like pregame warmups. He'd be booed off the field. I mean, there's just no way. Patrick Bailey wouldn't be getting the pass he's getting because he's not hitting. I mean, on and on and on and on and on. We're nice as a media. We're like medium as a media, and as a fan base, we're pretty mellow. I know you're going to be shocked by this. There's a lot of wafting of smoke in the outfield when I'm there. I mean, it's not like a concert because it's outside, but believe me, you get a certain smell. And to me, that's not conducive to yelling and screaming and being all pissed off. You're kind of chill. So I think we're a little bit more chill. And I'm going to play something for you in just a second, but just let me, there's no sound on this. But like, here's Jackson Merrill. This is in San Francisco. Look, he's just smiling. I mean, they're giving him grief, but look, he's not feeling threatened, right? He's just kind of chilling out there. Now, this is different. This is New York. Remember this play? Mookie Betts goes into the stands, and he's got the ball in his hand, and that guy in the front row in New York is trying to literally grabbing his glove and pulling the ball out. Watch when they show this. I'm sure you know this, but I'm comparing and contrasting what happens. I just don't think we would do that here. Now you can't because there's a net down the right field line. But watch him. He tries to catch it. Look at the guy grab his glove. He's holding his hand, and he's trying to steal the ball out of there. Now, look, A for effort, bro. But I just don't think we do that. So if you're comping, and that's Mookie Betts is a Dodger, not a Red Sox, so he has said before that it's even worse. But, like, I just don't think we do that here. Maybe we do. Maybe the drunk guy. It's only one guy out of, you know, how many ever guys. But, you know, there's a bunch of drunk New York fans. There's Jackson Merrill kind of laughing and giggling around. That doesn't seem nasty to me. And then I found this video when I was looking for some stuff about this. So this is a guy. I don't know who this is, but this seems like good-natured ribbing to me. You probably know this guy is. But this is a guy who was giving Jackson Merrill the business, just a random video. And it just seems like he's having fun. So this is San Francisco.
I bet you always 3-putt, you bum!
Can't make a par to save your life, brother.
I'm going to DM him after this. No, I'm going to be like, which one was your favorite?
I mean, does that seem evil and nasty to me? Like, that's what Jackson Merrill was crying about? Because he was talking about, like, a Prius. You drive a Prius, which goes back to, like, Hunter Pence, and people used to bring the signs and Hunter Pence and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, it's just good. That's just good-natured ribbing. I mean, that's not like the nasty stuff. Like, guys in the NBA, the guy, because people are so close these with the courtside seat, and we saw this with DeMarcus Cousins. I played that for you yesterday. Like, that gets nasty. I mean, I've been down there before they, you know, kicked all the radio people up to the top, and we would be like second row, and you would sit there as you're, you know, as you're preparing, as you're writing your notes, as you're, you know, charting the game and everything, and people would say nasty stuff. And I'm talking about like covering the Utah Jazz. I mean, Charles Barkley has said this, like those people, they leave their morals at the door and they are saying some nasty stuff about your family. And this is before, like, you could look up stuff on your phone. So to me, that doesn't look nasty. That looks good natured and funny. And he's like, I'm going to, like, how San Francisco is that? I'm going to DM the guy after and ask him what was his favorite. Like, that's not nasty. That's not venomous. You know, they're like, those people are mean. That wasn't mean. That was just kind of good natured fun to me. And that's what he seemed to be talking about. And he's just kind of smiling and everything. Now, look, that's not everybody. I understand that. And I'm not so naive to think that if you don't add alcohol, then you're going to get some nastiness, especially in the outfield. Like, I get it, man. But I just having, and this is, I talk about this at the beginning of every show. I've worked in a ton of different markets in this country. I've worked in the East. I've worked in the Midwest. They're nasty. People in Detroit are venomous and nasty. They want to make you cry. People in New York, we just saw, they have no problem grabbing Mookie Betts' glove, which is on his hand, and forcibly taking the ball out of said glove as his arm is like in this awkward position. So I just don't buy it. I know they're out there and I'm not, but I've been out there a ton of times. I've sat in a lot of different outfields in a number of different parks. And for the most part, things are good natured. And sometimes they get out of control and they get nasty. But if you're wearing Dodger blue in San Francisco, you're going to get some of that. If you're a Red Sox outfielder, as Mookie Betts was in New York, you're going to get some of that. And vice versa, Yankees, Red Sox, like some of those kind of things. There are nasty people, but by a large margin, large margin. Especially in San Francisco. It's just good natured. So I don't even, I'm looking at that going, what does Jackson Merrill know? This is his second year in the league. And the guy basically has just kind of a bit going on with him. And then he's going to DM him after the game and go, what was your favorite? Like, he's just playing with the guy. Like, that's not nasty. That is not nasty. I mean, we've seen nasty. What happened with DeMarcus Cousins was out of control the other night. So anyway, I'm not buying it. I just do not buy it. I know they're out there and I'm not, but I'm just not buying it. So there is your San Francisco fans are mean update. I don't buy it. All right, Vaughn traded. We already went over that. We'll go over AAA numbers in a minute. I got some really good John Lynch for you from the Pat McAfee show yesterday. Random things and a small short Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Bill. So let me make sure I didn't miss anything baseball-wise because I got a bunch of other stuff down here. But I just want to make sure that we didn't miss any baseball stuff before we move on from that. All right. Let's check out the chat line. What's going on with everybody? Anything, any questions, comments, thoughts on that? Yeah, I do remember. That's a great point by you. Yeah. Josh Hamilton's like, it smells like weed out here. It always smells like weed in the outfield. And I don't know about you, but I'm not overly aggressive. It's like you take a couple. The only thing that I'm getting mad at is like a hot dog. Like, it's going down. You know what I mean? Like, you're going up, you're getting some peanuts, a dog. Like, it's just, it's not nasty. Now, you want to talk about like a college football game with a bunch of drunks who've been marinating? I've told you about that. I did pre-post game for the Steelers right across from the stadium. I saw numerous fights, like a Ravens Steelers game. Saw lots of fights there, a lot of aggressiveness. Had a couple of police officer friends that were like, you can't even believe what happens. Like, that's different. Football by nature is nasty. Baseball by nature is not. And so, like I said, while there's some people who might yell some stuff, there was an example right now, right there of, you know, that looks like San Francisco to me, a guy who's kind of got some premeditated stuff, have a little bit of fun, and is going to DM the player after the game, say, which was your favorite? And Jackson Merrill's looking back there laughing. Like, dude, that didn't look nasty to me. I'm sorry. It didn't look venomous. Just, I don't buy that at all. I think it was ridiculous. But anyway, I could be totally wrong. Let's see. What else do we got? All right. Let's move to, let me double check. Now I'm missing anything. All right. Let's move to what we're talking about as far as AAA is concerned. I'm going to show you a couple of things. So this was AAA last night. Bryce Eldridge, 1-for-4, hit another home run. Marco Luciano, 3-for-4, home run. Hunter Bishop, been a prospect forever, former first round pick. So I just wanted to show a couple of things as far as that. And then let me share my screen with you just because at some point in the second half of the season, they're going to need some of these guys. I don't think they think, I mean, Dom Smith's off to a nice start. we'll see. I've told you about Tyler Fitzgerald. I don't know what's going on with the lack of power. I like that he has the athleticism that he does, but it makes me a little bit concerned that he's not hitting the ball out of the park. So Encarnacion with the big club gone. We'll see. Here's Meckler. So Wade Meckler is an interesting one because, I mean, it's been a few years for Wade Meckler and he's fought a bunch of different injuries and we kind of forgot about him, but he, you know, he's kind of a scrappy type, hitting 304 down there, 839 OPS, not a ton of sample size with 46. But one thing it says left field right there, they're actually playing him at second base. The Giants love to do this. They're going to say, well, can the guy play second at all? Because with Tyler Fitzgerald, and what I'm thinking with Meckler is not just second, but can he be a super U? You know, Meckler plays from left, Meckler plays from second, you know, that kind of thing, a versatile super U, which right now the Giants really don't have. So they're playing him at second to see what that is. Matos, everybody's going to scream and yell. It's only 26 at-bats, but everybody's going to scream and yell. He's hitting 308 with an 833 OPS. I can't decide whether Luis Matos deserves a long runway to say, okay, you're our guy, you're just going to play out here, or if he's a 4A player. I just can't decide because everybody wants to, you know, to give him a long runway and complains that he doesn't get it. And I've said this before. I say this with Casey Schmidt right now. He's going to be their third baseman. He made a mistake last night late in the game that may have cost them the game against Colorado. He's going to play and should. You got to learn from it. And you can't be looking into the dugout. Damn, I made a mistake. Am I going to get traded? Am I going to get cut? Am I going to, you know, whatever. Am I going to get demoted? I can't be thinking like that. Max Stassi's a guy who's actually played in this league and been all right. Let's go down to Luciano. Again, played a little bit of first base to just see what he could do there. Clearly, that was not a good experiment because he hasn't been back since. Playing in left fields, probably a DH. 11 home runs, 33 RBIs. That's not bad. But he's just hitting 215 with a 734 OPS. So I don't see him up anytime soon, even though he's showing some power down there. What else? I don't know what happened to Brett Wisely. He had a stretch last year where he looked like he was really going to be a good player. Hitting 221 with a 653 in AAA. That ain't good. And then Bryce Eldridge. Now, again, small sample size, 29 at-bats, but we've seen the two home runs, right? We've seen the two home runs, nine RBIs, and in eight games, that's not bad production. But he's hitting 138 with a 580 OPS. Super small sample size. But for those who are saying, let's get him up, let's get him up, let's get him up, let's get him up, he needs to marinate a little longer. So we've seen the highlights. We get excited, but then you look at Bryce Eldridge, he's hitting a buck 38. So my point in bringing all this up is who could potentially help them that's down there? Meckler is a guy that they're using as a super U. Matos is always a thought. Luciano we want to see at some point, but again, while the 11 home runs are nice, not really anything else is, and Eldridge probably needs an entire season. We'll see. You know, we'll see with Eldridge. It's an extremely early, but that's what's going on down on the farm, and people like to know what's going on as far as that is concerned. And I was thinking too, like, okay, is there anybody else that they could potentially, what did I just do there? Is there anybody else that they could potentially bring up at this particular point? So yeah, you bring up a great point, Mark. When you're striking out a third of the time, like people wanted McCray up here and it's like, look, he's a really nice athlete, really good defensive center fielder, but they've already got that in Jung Hoo Lee, who's a good, you know, good base runner, good defender. They don't really need McCray. He just hasn't shown enough. He's shown a little bit of pop here and there, but like I said, when they're striking out to that level, just not happening. So anyway, there you go. There is an update. Yeah, their trade value. Somebody just said Luciano has no trade value. Hi, Kyle. They don't have position players with any trade value, and I don't know what happened to the organizational depth in that regard, but you know, Casey Schmidt hasn't gotten it done. Luciano, we had our fingers crossed on. Eldridge is the latest. I'm sorry if I don't, you know, jump up and down for Eldridge. It's not that I don't think he can play. It's just that when you look at position players that they have developed, I'm sitting there going, okay, who would that be? I mean, Ramos has done a really nice job. But as far as, you know, the latest infielder, I mean, that's why they signed Adames. That's why they extended Chapman. That's, you know, they're hoping for Fitzgerald, and I was optimistic about him. But the start is not great. First base is an absolute joke to have. Such a lack of organizational depth that you have to go comb the minor leagues and go get Dom Smith, who was a first-round pick of the Mets in 2013 and has bounced all around in the league, and he actually looks pretty decent. He's given him professional at-bats, which makes you look at the way they hung on so long with Wade Jr., and I told you this a bunch of times. It wasn't that he – it was – well, it was. He wasn't getting the results. I get it. But the at-bats were atrocious. I mean, the at-bats were so bad, and all the signs were there. It was like, why are you waiting so long? The at-bats are atrocious. And at least Dom Smith is giving you professional at-bats so far. It's not very, you know, it's not very much. And the bomb yesterday helps because that sticks in your brain. But he's having decent at-bats. I mean, Lamont Wade Jr., they were non-competitive at-bats. He's swinging through fastballs he'd normally, you know, just like, what are you doing? He was completely lost. So anyway, I'm not complaining. They're going into LA to take on the Dodgers, and we'll do bottom of the pint tonight, but I want to make sure that I'm accurate here, which is they're right there. They're right behind the Dodgers, and they have a real opportunity here, and the pitching is that good. They've just got to get the hitting going. So anyway, there you go. AAA numbers I gave you, that's enough for baseball for the day. And Antonio, good to see you, man. Happy Friday to everybody. And by the way, if you're just joining us, first of all, happy Friday. It is Friday the 13th, if you are so inclined. Happy Father's Day for those who celebrate on Sunday. I will be having a nice brunch with a number of cocktails I'm very excited about. In fact, the place I'm going to is kind of an upscale steak kind of a place, but they do a great brunch. I do really hope that they have a really nice, because I'm not a champagne guy. I'm not a mimosa guy. Now, my wife, different story. I'm not a mimosa guy, and I really don't like foo-foo brunchy drinks, but what I would like in a place like this is, like, I wonder if they come up with some sort of a take on an old fashioned, you know, like, I don't know, even like a vanilla bean kind of a thing, or you may laugh at me. I'm not even kidding you. The best, let me go on a random for just 1 second. The best old fashioned I ever had, and if they had one of these, I would be absolutely thrilled with it, is we were in Kona, and we were on the water, and we're at this steak place. It was absolutely great. And, you know, they bring out the specialty menu, and obviously, an old fashioned goes great with a steak. People like red wine. I'm not a big wine drinker, but they made a Kona coffee infused old fashioned. And with a lot of those things, it's subtle. You know, a lot of type of things. Or, you know, this kind, that kind. They make all sorts of different kind of old fashions. And but you could really taste the coffee. And I'm a big coffee fan. And it was unbelievable. So if they're listening right now, I'm telling you, I need a Kona coffee infused old fashioned for Sunday. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Oh, great question there. That is a tremendous question. Go-to cocktail. You know, it really depends. I don't know if I'm like this, like if everybody's like this, but in the wintertime when it's colder, and you know, it's not like we're in the Midwest or the East here, when it's a little bit colder, I'll go with, you know, your dark liquors. I'm a big fan of whiskey. In fact, I have a bunch of great whiskeys. When we get the studio redone, I'll bring them back because I had a big shelf, but we have a bar cart with great whiskeys. I'm a big fan of bourbons and whiskeys and things like that. And I love an old fashioned. Like if I'm sitting in a place, I'll do old fashioned. However, in the summertime, I'm not a huge beer guy, but it's not like I don't like beer. I'll do some in the summertime if it's really hot. Love beer at a baseball game. I don't know why all of a sudden it comes over me that I'd love a beer at a baseball game. I wouldn't say I'm a beer snob, but I you know, maybe a little bit above a domestic. And then in the summertime, I'll always come up with some kind of vodka cocktail. I don't know why. Just, you know, it's hot out. It's nice and refreshing. So I'll go with some sort of a, you know, vodka type of a cocktail. Vodka soda is a definite go-to in the summertime. Vodka soda with the lime is very refreshing, Jerry. So I'll go with a vodka soda in the summer, but big into bourbons. And if you give me an old-fashioned, and if I see like a cocktail menu that's got, you know, different types of old-fashioneds, you know, that kind of a thing. And lots of places get creative with them nowadays. Really into it. Really into it. I have a friend of mine who works in a steakhouse in Danville, and his name's Chad. He is incredible. And we always sit at the bar there, and I sit up at the bar and he'll say, what are you looking for? And he'll give me different kind of whiskeys to try out. He's always got all these great type of things. So anyway, I would always go with the bourbon. Definitely. Definitely have a palate for that. So anyway, there you go. Let's see. Do different drink for different sports. Nah, I generally stay sober. I don't know why, for unless it's, you know, if we go out to watch some sports or something. Again, I'm trying to think. Yeah, like I said, I try to get vodka soda probably. If I'm just like out having a drink or something, I'll go vodka soda a lot of times. Like I said, unless it's, you know, dead of winter, and then I'm going like an old fashioned, something like that. So. And then, as Dom says, the lady beers, which, like I said, I might bring those back. In fact, that's the second straight week that somebody has brought up the Lady Beers, if you're not familiar with it. We did Bottom of the Pint for the first time. And I brought, and I don't even know if these are around anymore, but I did the Corona. It was a citrus flavored Corona, and it was actually pretty good, I got to say. And in the summertime, I could totally see that being a really good beer. I could probably drink about 18 of those like in a row. No, I couldn't. I'd fall on my face. But what I'm saying is that like it, when it's a hot day and everything, they just taste good. And I got a bunch of grief for it. Then I said, nope, done with it. Not going to do it. And done. People were giving me grief about it, calling them Lady Beers. And John Joseph was down there saying it was a Senorita beer. It was not a Zima. It was not anything like that. It was just, it had a citrus flavor, which, you know, Corona, they put a lime in it anyway, but it had like more of a orange flavor to it maybe than a lime flavor, but they were really good and they go down like nothing. And anyway, I might go buy some of those just to spite everybody tonight so that they can give me grief about it. I'm thinking about it now. I'm absolutely thinking about it. All right. Sorry. I went on a longer tangent than I thought I would. So there's your baseball update. We will be back for Bottom of the Pint tonight. I'm not going anywhere because we promised you optimistic injury update from John Lynch. So let me do this. I'm going to play. Let's see. I'm going to, there's three cuts that I want to play. I'm going to play the Aiyuk cut last. All right. Cause I want to keep you here. So here is John Lynch on yesterday with Pat McAfee on ESPN on the McAfee Show. And here he is talking about this year's offseason versus 2024.
About it, certainly not our standard. Embarrassing, you know, what happened last year. A lot of reasons for it, injuries to Christian and whatnot. But ultimately, those are just excuses, and we had to own that. And we had to take a hard look and say, where can we be better? And when I knew our players took that to heart was day one of off-season program, and we had 100% attendance and for something that's voluntary. And that spoke to me that our players understood we fell way short of our standard. And the work's been excellent. And now they got to continue that work away from here. But these are really important weeks, and they're weeks you kind of cringe as a GM, as a member of this, as a player. This is when I always knew I had an opportunity, because when you're all here, I think everyone's on a level playing field. When you leave, that's when I knew, okay, I can make up now because we're on our own. And what are you going to do with that time off? And so I hope our players take advantage of it. I think have a really good feeling that they will, by the way they've approached this off.
All right. So I guess the reason to play that and the reason I did want to play that was they're off to a different kind of start. Now, does that mean that they're going to have a great year? No. But what he said at the beginning there is, and I think a lot of people forget this, is I was watching that entire interview yesterday and thinking what clips that I wanted to take out of it from the Pat McAfee Show, is that this is a really good organization. And sometimes because we're so close and we analyze it so much and there's so many people aggregating 49ers news and they're trying to, you know, get you to click on their stuff and everything, if we bottom line what the 49ers are, they're one of the best organizations in the NFL. They're one of the best organizations in all the sports. And you can hate them all you want or like them or whatever the case may be. You can't deny that. They're really well put together. They're a well-oiled machine. It doesn't mean that they can't go through ebbs and flows if they have injuries or whatever. But 6-11, like John Lynch just said, that's embarrassing for this organization. When Kyle Shanahan first took over with John Lynch and all the people in the front office, they had a bunch of work to do. Now, did they have to revamp that a little bit? Now, yeah, sure. They're not going to, as Steve Young said, and I played for you the other day, they're not going to walk into every stadium now and just overwhelmingly have the most talent. So they're going to have to execute and all these things. But we forget, Kyle Shanahan's a damn good head coach. Is he perfect? No. Could he be a little bit more aggressive? Yes. Does he get conservative when it's late in the game? Yeah. Does he deserve the reputation as a guy who can get close but not win the big one? Yeah, to this point, he does. But no one's perfect, and I'm not saying he is. But as far as being an offensive genius, he's that. As far as being one of the best play callers in the league, he's that. As far as being one of the most innovative offensive minds in the game, he's that. So and if you don't believe me, just listen to not only 49ers players, but coaches on other teams, players on other teams. The whole reason why people say it's easy in the Kyle Shanahan system, okay. It's not, but people say those kind of things. So look, Kyle Shanahan's really good. Say whatever you want about him. Is he perfect? No. Does he need to, you know, change a couple things? Yeah. Am I happy that Clay Kubiak's there and might be able to, you know, change some things up, especially in the red zone or from an aggressive standpoint, yeah, I think that's going to help this offense. But on that side of the ball, and we often forget about it from Kyle Shanahan, he's elite. All right. So he's a great coach. He's a great motivator. He's elite on the offensive side of the ball. You have that going for you in addition to all the really good offensive players. Now, I'm going to play something about the NFL draft, which is going to be the most, you know, along with Saleh and the defense, this is going to be incredibly important as far as what's going on, as far as these rookies, and I want to have you take a look at them. But one thing I don't want people to forget is they're 6-11, they're embarrassed, and they've got the buy-in, and all teams wouldn't be able to do this. Trent Williams, he doesn't come here in the offseason. He's been here 100% of the time. Christian McCaffrey, he doesn't need to be here. He's been here 100% of the time. George Kittle has a barn and all this. George Kittle has a field and a barn, and he doesn't need to be here. He's been here 100% of the time. Brock Purdy didn't have a contract. He's been here 100% of the time. That's so reflective of your organization. And so, look, can they have another 6-11 season? Yeah, they could have injuries and all those kind of things. But if they get average health with this schedule, they're going to easily win 10 games. Because that's the culture around here, and it's really, really important. And you and I talk about this all the time. Trying to build winning culture when you haven't won for a long time is really difficult. The expectation level around the 49ers, because I've been down to HQ a million times, is that they win. I mean, it's just they don't even think about anything else. It's just very matter of fact with them. So as we scramble around the media to talk about this, it's kind of matter of fact that they're going to bounce back in the building. And because they're such a great organization, I think they will. So John is talking about culture and how things are different and how these guys are showing up. And I do think that's going to, unless they have another injury-riddled season like they had last year, that is going to reflect in the product next year. Now, this is what's important. Okay, we can say all those things that are all, you know, tangible but kind of intangible. But here's really where the important stuff part is. So yesterday, and I said this in a short, Robert Saleh had said, in fact, I'm going to play this for you after I play John Lynch. But Robert Saleh said, hey, they're off to a really good start, but we'll see when the pads come on. People kept asking him, how's it going? How's it going? How's it going? And as I tell you all the time, they're running around in shorts, man. That's great. Nick Martin look great. The rookie linebacker who's 5'11", 220 with 4.4 speed at Oklahoma State, he's looking great in shorts. But when the big boys get out there and the guards start shooting out at him, can those rookie defensive tackles keep him off him so he can make plays, or is he going to get swallowed up? So we're not going to really learn as much as we need to until the pads come on. But here's John Lynch talking about the rookies coming in, because along with the defense just as a whole, but there's so many rookies on that defense, Martin, the two defensive tackles, this is really one of the huge keys to the season, how these rookies respond.
When you're looking at guys to pick them, what is the biggest takeaway? Is it their love of ball? Is it their production? What is your big kind of point of emphasis whenever you're trying to build or add somebody to your culture?
Yeah. First of all, I tell you that, like, in this job, people ask me, you know, what's your favorite deal? And I think game day, even though I can't do a damn thing, I just kind of say, let's go, boys. have at them. So I love watching our guys compete, but the draft would be second. And I think the reason why is because our entire organization comes together for the draft. And when you're talking, you know, personnel, coaching, R&D, analytics, the chefs who are feeding us, like everybody comes together and we all know how important the draft, it's the lifeblood of your organization. And, so it's really a cool, and it's a good question. You know, what is the, you know, what is like at the top of the list in terms of what is a 49er? Who do we want to be 49ers? It's really interesting. You know, something I find every year, I challenge our R&D guys, our data, the whole world's about data right now. What's the data say? You know, what translates into a 49er better than anything? And, you know, it's really who these guys are as people. You know, all these guys, we always say they got to be in the club athletically in terms of a football player. I think we've gone to great lengths to define what we want at each position, but it's their intangibles. Who are they as people? Because as you know, Pat, like the NFL seasons, they're long, they're hard. Nothing about this game is easy. So it's the people that can endure the times when they're going to get tough, the practices when they're going to get tough. Do we do two-a-days and all that anymore? Do we go 6-week training camps? No, but it's still a tough sport. It's uncomfortable. And so who has the mental fortitude? Who has the physical?
Just to kind of, I mean, I thought that was just an awesome answer from John Lynch. But if you think about it, there's a few things that as I was watching that I thought of, which is think about the character of some of these guys, which again goes into why I think they're going to bounce back if they have fair injury luck this year. Trent Williams, George Kittle, Fred Warner, Demo Lenore, Brock Purdy. That's why when Brandon Ayuk kind of acts like a jackass, it jumps out so much as a 49er, because you just don't see guys do that. But Christian McCaffrey, I mean, I can go on down the line. I mean, these are good football players, so it's chicken or the egg kind of a thing. It's like, well, they're a good football player and they're a good guy, but that's not always how it works. And when you're here and you aren't that type of a guy, you really stand out, you know? And so you look at it and it's love for ball. You know, all these guys that I just mentioned right there, they love ball, man. That's just how they are. Even Malik Mustafa, I mean, guys like that, even the young guys, there's a bunch of young guys on this roster. Dominic Pooney, I've talked to all those guys and they just have great character. So first of all, it's not that they won't take a chance on drafting guys, but as everyone bitches and moans and some people complain and fire this guy, fire that guy, especially in football, you've got to get your kind of guys, and that takes years. So the first couple of years for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, and I'm certainly not making excuses, but you've got to get certain guys off your team and you bring certain guys onto your team. And they made mistakes early. Reuben Foster wasn't a 49er. Joe Williams wasn't a 49er. Like, you know, you go on and on and on down the line. They just, those guys did not fit the culture of what they're trying to do. So one of the reasons I think they're going to bounce back too is they just have those kind of guys, smart guys, intelligent guys, hardworking guys, guys who get it, you know, guys who are work, like John Lynch at the beginning of that, or at the beginning of the other cut said, you know, I hope these guys in the time away, because this is the time, like everybody's in great shape, everything. And then you come into training camp. Is somebody going to gain 10 pounds? Cause you and I both know that's really easy to do. If somebody just go on the, off the deep end, they're going to take their final vacation and suck down a bunch of citrus Coronas, eat a bunch of tacos and burritos, and then come back and they're 20 pounds overweight. The Niners don't have to worry about that. Think George Kittle's going to do that? Think Christian McCaffrey's going to do that? You think Brock Purdy's going to do that? Of course they're not. None of those guys. Think Nick Bosa's going to do that? I mean, the character that they've assembled on this team is, it's phenomenal. And so if these guys, and I don't know these 2025 guys enough, but if those guys come back and those rookies come in and they're that type of player, because that's the one thing that Mel Kiper's and all these different guys, and I'm certainly guilty of it, like that guy thinks the best player. Do I know that player? No. They've done the interviews. Which for the 49ers is just as important. They're not going to take, I don't think, a risk. And that's why, like I said, in terms of it, Brandon Ayuk, I talked to him a bunch of times at practices. I've talked to him a bunch of times after games. Since he's had the contract done, totally different guy. I don't know who's advising him. I don't know who's talking to him, whatever the case may be. But he just stands out because it's like, it's just a weird deal. By the way, speaking of him, this was, I believe, yesterday. 7 months today, thank you, God. I'm going to play this cut from John Lynch in just a second, giving, as I put down there, an optimistic diagnosis on him. Now, it's 7 months. Now, we are in training camp in a month, right? Training camp is a month away. He's not going to be ready for that. Okay, that's 8 months. All right, a couple months after that, you're looking at 10 months. About then, a guy should be ready. So as we're sitting here trying to determine, and I got to be honest with you, I don't know if I can remember a time in which there's been such uncertainty of when a player is going to come back. I mean, some people are saying it's going to be midseason. Some people are saying, you know, we've seen guys, Adrian Peterson came back really fast from an ACL. Other guys, it's just lingered. Everybody is different. But as you're going to hear from John Lynch here, when you have, what's are you 27, 28 years old, an elite athlete in the prime of his career, he can come back pretty quickly. So this is an optimistic update on Brandon Ayuk with John Lynch on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday.
This wasn't going to work out. It was loud. How is that relationship now? And how do you view that time looking back on it with Ayuk?
Relationship's good. You know, Brandon's been here. He had a tough injury. You know, everyone saw that play against Kansas City. It was crushing for us because Brandon's such a big part of who we are. You know, looking back on the Brandon situation, I think every situation that you go through in life, in football, in this job, it's a learning opportunity. You know, I look at things like that, like what could we have done differently to have made that a little more seamless? And sometimes those things are tough. They can be contentious. There's things that I learned would we have done some things differently? And I think Brandon and I have had these conversations that are there things he would have done differently? Absolutely. But one thing, I think in families, you know, you have little spats, and then you give a big hug at the end, and you work together, and that's where we're at. And Brandon's doing a tremendous job coming back. You know, these guys that are incredibly skilled athletes, they tend to heal a lot faster. And it's kind of incredible how well he's healing. And, you know, he's putting in the work. We're proud of Brandon, and we're looking forward to him being part of this team. Moving forward, we made a big investment in him. We're proud to have him part of our franchise, and you know, looking for big things from him. And we're going to let him get right, and before we get him back on that field. But he's a big, he's an important part of this team.
Okay, a couple of real key things he said there. Number one, he said it was incredible how well he was healing. He said that it, you know, given what a great athlete he is, I'm not doing this verbatim. He's healing so quickly; they heal so quickly. Brandon Ayuk, you know, sitting there at 7 months. It's only been 7 months. It's about a 10-month injury nowadays. So we're looking at the next few months, and we sit here on, what, June 13th, Friday the 13th. And so for him to be fully healed, logically, you'd say at some point in September. Well, for everybody, because like I said, today is June 13th. Okay, September 13th. That's around week one. So all I'm saying about Brandon Ayuk is, as we sit here, it doesn't sound like to me, because a lot of people were speculating, maybe it's going to be midseason. It doesn't sound like midseason to me. Now, if he misses the first, say, let's say he's on the PUP list and he has to miss the first four games and he's back for the fifth game, that's not so bad. You know, and as I sit right now, is wide receiver a concern for the 49ers? It is. But also, start reading the tea leaves in what is being said. And believe me, John Lynch, and you know this, is Mr. Optimistic. Kyle Shanahan is Mr. Pessimistic. That's just how they work, good cop, bad cop. So John Lynch is always optimistic. Okay, so we take that into consideration when we think about this situation here. But it sounds like he's healing fast. It sounds like it's going well. He doesn't have to say those things. If Kyle was being interviewed by Pat McAfee, he'd say, we'll see. He's progressing. We'll see. I mean, he's been asked about it, and that's essentially what he's saying. He hasn't been optimistic in what he said about Brandon Ayuk, because he's thinking to himself, I'd rather say worst-case scenario and then be surprised than say best-case scenario and be disappointed. That's kind of Kyle's viewpoint on things. John Lynch is opposite. So let's just make sure that we know who we're talking about here. But let's just use a little bit of logic and a little bit of reporter instinct here, which is, okay, they haven't gone out and gotten Amari Cooper. They got DeMarcus Robinson, but DeMarcus Robinson is not Amari Cooper, even at this point of Cooper's career. Cooper's a lot better. Now, maybe they tried to get Amari Cooper and he was asking for too much, but he would be perfect in this offense. But they didn't go out and get him. They got a DeMarcus Robinson, who's used to being like a third or a fourth wide receiver. And that's kind of insurance pod. That's a safety net kind of a signing. Amari Cooper would tell you, this isn't progressing so well. He's still at this point of his career, you could say that he was a number one wide receiver, at worst a number two wide receiver. So, A, they've got to be optimistic about what they've seen from Brandon Ayuk, or they would have gotten a higher caliber receiver than DeMarcus Robinson, who's an okay veteran, there's no doubt. But he's bounced around a little bit. You know what you're getting with him, and you know where your wide receiver core is if he's among the top two or three. All right, it's just okay. So he's a safety net type of a wide receiver. Amari Cooper would be a step up from that. And if they had signed Amari Cooper, and they still may, they've got the money to do it, that might tell you a little bit more in a pessimistic sense of where Brandon Ayuk is. So I'd be optimistic about that. Ricky Pearsall, Kyle Shanahan said this, they're just holding me out for precautionary reasons. Okay, I'll buy that, except for the fact that precautionary reasons, I'd love to get Ricky Pearsall on the field as much as I possibly can to work within the offense, given how much time he missed last year. I want to get him on the same page more with Brock Purdy. They probably are working away from the facility now together. It's not a question of work ethic with Ricky Pearsall. I'm not calling him injury prone because that's not fair at this point of his career. But I've got to see him stay healthy for a longer period of time. And then we all know what Juwan Jennings is. And Jordan Watkins, I'll put an asterisk by his name because he showed out well in shorts, and he should have. He runs a 4.37. He's a great athlete. He should have shined at OTAs. But let's see when things get a little different and you get on the pads and it's training camp and Fred Warner's talking trash to you and Dima Lenore's talking trash to you, and we'll just see. You know, I'll say that you had a nice OTA, but we'll just see. So from a wide receiver standpoint, John says optimism. Kyle says we'll see. They didn't go out and sign what would be considered a number one type of wide receiver. So it does tell me that they are optimistic on his return. And I think that people are saying midseason. I don't think that's going to be accurate. I would say that maybe they put him on the pup and he misses the first four. But if Brandon Ayuk plays in 13 games for the 49ers this year, and we've already established Trent Williams is healthy, Christian McCaffrey is healthy, George Kittle is back, Brock Purdy is happy, they're going to score. The worst schedule in the game. They're going to score. They're going to be near the top. They'll be in the top five offensively as far as points per game is concerned. The 49ers will be. They will be. And then you only have Brandon Ayuk miss four games. Now, maybe it takes a couple of games for Brandon Ayuk to be Brandon Ayuk. Okay, so he's Brandon Ayuk for 11 of the 17 next year. We'll take that. And I think they'd be in pretty good shape with it. So anyway, there you go. There's the latest as far as Brandon Ayuk is concerned. One thing defensively I wanted to play, because I promised you Robert Saleh yesterday. We were having some digital issues there, and so we played Bryce Huff instead for you yesterday. But here is Robert Saleh in defense, and I want to make a comment on this as well. So here's Saleh talking about working with this defense so far.
It's been good from a benefit of the doubt, if you will, but you guys know how this profession is. It's first game, have a bad day, and all the benefit of the doubt goes out the window. So, it's been great working with these guys. They're like everybody else. Like I said, they want to be coached. They want to know why, and they want it done the right way. And it's been a good first couple of months.
I love Robert Saleh. I really do. He's one of the best guys around that you can talk to. I don't know that anybody else pulls off the bald look as good as he does. Was it Jason Aldean or something, whatever it is? He does, but I mean, yeah, pretty good. And he can grow it out a little bit, look really good. But anyway, that's beside the point. He brought up a great point there, because everybody is expecting it to be the same defense. And Robert Saleh is like, I don't know if you remember this, but basically Nick Bosa and Fred Warner are the only guys around that were around when I was here. So it's like he's got an entirely new defense of guys that are here. So it's not like all these guys from 2019 when they went to the Super Bowl are here. He's going, wait a minute, you know, this is a whole new crew. And what his point was, that was a short clip of it. His point was somebody asked him a question of, you know, is everybody buying in and everything? He's like, look, yeah, everybody's buying in, but we haven't done anything. He brought up two or three times, when the pads come on, I'll let you know. And I think what he's saying there is something that I've been saying, which is Mikel Williams, tremendous looking athlete. Let's see when the pads come on. Those two big defensive tackles that need to keep big guards off of my linebackers, Fred Warner, and especially Nick Martin, we'll see when the pads come on. The secondary, we'll see when the pads come on. You know, he doesn't know what he's got in the safety spot. I mean, I think he might have an idea. They asked him about Jason Pinnock, which is a guy that he had in New York. He said they originally drafted him as a corner. He had some of the worst Pro Football Focus numbers as far as coverage was concerned, which is a concern for the safeties, because they had some issues last year. Jair Brown runs a 4.65. I get a little nervous for him, especially on deep routes. We saw that Justin Jefferson against the Niners early in the season. I just get nervous about that. Renardo Green, I hope, can take a step up in his second year. Demo Lenore, I love that they put him inside because I think he's a dog, but he's going to be forced to the outside because either Trey Brown, who got hurt a lot with Seattle, or Upton Stout, the rookie that everybody's talking about, but he's 5'8", 181. He obviously can't play outside with that number. So you're going to take a guy who I thought was an elite slot corner and keep him on the outside, which he's a good outside corner. He's an elite slot corner. So I bet the Niners probably wanted an outside corner so that they could still move Demo to the inside, but that's not the way it worked out. They, at that pick, said, you know what? Here's a really good slot corner. We're okay with Demo moving to the outside. I'm not saying Demo's bad on the outside. He's not. He's just really good on the inside. So you got an inside corner. He's going to stay on the outside. And then you got a couple of safeties, one in Mustafa, who's going to be a while, and one in Jair Brown, who's coming off of foot surgery. It makes me nervous. But Robert Saleh is saying they're getting the buy-in now, but he brings up a great point, which is, okay, they get into a game, not preseason, whatever, but they get into a regular season game. They have that opener, and they get torched for 30 points. The defenders, some of them are going to look inwardly and say, yeah, I didn't play well, but the other ones are going to be like, I never played for Robert Saleh before. This sucks. I mean, Bryce Huff's played for him and knows, and Bosa knows, and Warner knows, but a lot of those other guys, they don't know. And so they're like, I don't trust this guy. So what he's was essentially saying there was, yeah, everything's kumbaya right now. We're running around in shorts. But A, once we get in pads, we'll see. And B, once we get into a game, all of a sudden, that's out the window. That's what he said at the beginning. I have their buy-in until I don't, is essentially what he's saying. Because if they don't like the scheme or they think it's stupid or whatever the case may be, they're going to be like, I don't care what Robert Saleh's done. He got fired with the Jets. He might have taken this team to a Super Bowl at some point, but so anyway, that was good stuff from him. So good stuff from a Lynch BA update and other things. I'm Robert Saleh, which I promised you yesterday. So again, episode 164, Giants blow it yesterday. Dom Smith working, Yamamoto Webb tonight. We will do a bottom of the pipe. Can the Giants hang? I think they can. SF fans mean update. We did that for you. Andrew Vaughn traded the former Cal Bear from the White Sox to the Brewers, which did the Giants look into him, even though he's been terrible. And then Milwaukee, if they start falling out of it, would they put Vaughn at first and move Reese Hoskins? That would be interesting. AAA numbers I showed you. Lynch BA update plus a couple other things. And we even played a bonus Robert Saleh for you today. Did a little bit of random things today, mostly on drinking, which we do a lot. By the way, speaking of an Upton Stout and drinking, I don't mind a nice Guinness. Oof, very nice. Black and Blonde is good. But yeah, nice Guinness is nice. You can't suck those down or anything like that. I wouldn't have them on the bottom of the pint tonight, for example. I'm not chugging a Guinness, but they are good. I am a Guinness fan. All right, I will play Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol. This is not, I'm going to do it just because I like playing the open, to be completely honest with you. But this is just kind of a weird thing, and it gets us into a tangent, which sometimes we often talk about. So sometimes we often talk about, that didn't make any sense. Here we go.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John.
Caboose Pistol brought to you by my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Riopellin. Whole show right there in San Rose. Click on that QR code. You want to feel better? Yeah, you do. Of course. I do the, or my wife does the stem cell treatments. She is feeling great. The elbow, the shoulder, absolutely amazing. She just did up in her foot the other day. She's feeling great. I do the low T. You don't have to do those shots every single week. Absolutely is a life changer, is a game changer for me. Click on that QR code that I just showed you, which I'll show you one more time, or all you have to do, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle is R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle. R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, go to the website, check it out, because it's not only what I talk to you about all the time with the low T or my wife doing these stem cell treatments, they do all sorts of treatments, men, women, make you feel better, look better. Check them out, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, right there in San Ramon. If you're in the East Bay, no brainer. If you're not in the East Bay, it is 100% worth the drive, and please make sure that you tell Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle that I sent you over, and he's going to treat you great, but maybe that smidge more. So make sure that you tell them I sent you over. All right, here is your Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol. We talk about tattoos a lot. I got like three tattoos. I like tattoos. They can be addicting. I understand that. You see that tattoo there, though? Jason Kelce, who, my God, are we going to be subject to Jason Kelce like we were last football season? Please, no. I got nothing against him, but it's like Kelce, 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 Kelce. Between Travis and Jason, it's like, come on, man. So anyway, somebody's got to explain it to me. Jason Kelce reacts to fans' naughty pinup style Eagles tattoo. Somebody's actually got that tattoo of Jason Kelce on their body. A man has that tattoo on their body. And I got to be honest with you, man. You could be the biggest Eagles fan. Like, what would be the equivalent of that tattoo on a Niners fan? Like, would that be like a shirtless Joe Montana or Jerry Rice? Or, I mean, like, what would be the equivalent of that? I don't know. Christian McCaffrey, like all rocked up. Maybe George Kittle. Kittle's very Kelce-esque and certainly has the, if he wanted to, could go into TV and do the things that Jason Kelce is doing. And I think even at a higher level. So maybe it would be like having a shirtless George Kittle tattooed on your body. Like I just, and again, my tattoos, some are meaningful. Others I got when I was 18. Like I got a sun on my back, which actually could use a touch up. And it signified to me at the age of 18 in my 18-year-old mind that it's the sun is coming up for a new day, you know, carpe diem kind of a thing, seize the day type of a deal. And I don't mind it. I have another one, and I've told you the story before. I actually got it. I was doing a morning show, and we were doing all these bets with people. And so, you know, like I said, we tased me, actually, but we did pepper spray in a guy's eye that lost a sports bet, a game. paintball. We did a paintball thing with a guy in a Speedo running, and we all shot paintballs, like all sorts of dumb things like that, until our lawyers came to us one day and said, no more, just like no more. So anyway, this guy was supposed to, let's see, he was a Lakers fan, and the Lakers lost to the Jazz. And so in the Karl Malone, Shaq, Kobe days. And so he was going to have to get a Utah Jazz tattoo somewhere on his body, even though he's a Lakers fan. He didn't show up. And so there's the tattoo people there on the morning show. And they're like, what do we do? And I'm like, well, you guys are down here. Why don't you just, and they have a, it's a GRL, which is my dad's name and my son's name, George Richard Lund. And so I said, well, you guys are here, just do it. And so I did the show while they did this tattoo on the back of my arm. I mean, I don't regret it for a second. So, I mean, there's certain things where the son, but I get it. I had an idea about it. I'm the GRL. I'm glad I did. My dad's passed. My son is very important to me. So, you know, I don't have an issue with that. But like Jason Kelce, like I guess it's just the addiction of tattoos, like a shirtless Jason Kelce on your body. I don't understand. Like, why would I get that on my body? And especially, it's kind of like a, you know, it's like a sexy kind of a thing going on. Like I said, pin up style Eagles tattoo. I get it. You're a big Eagles fan or something. I even get it to a certain extent. I mean, it's gone overboard. Like people will try to do a prediction of a Super Bowl. And so they'll put that Super Bowl. It's like, why don't you just leave the Super Bowl thing blank? Like Lions fans did that, right? And it's like Super Bowl champions and like a Lions thing. Like, what's the rush, number one? You could get it afterwards. But you could like at least fill in, like do it and then fill in the year, but they'll do like the year and it's like, okay, that's inaccurate. So that's like going to a third world country where they give out the t-shirts of the losing team. Like that's on your arm. And like 50 years from now, you're not going to remember if they won it or not. Yeah, they didn't. It's like, what do you mean they didn't? You got a tattooed on there. They didn't. What was the rush? I mean, that just seems to be a big thing. Ooh, look, social media is going to make a big deal that I did a Lions Super Bowl tattoo before the season. Brilliant. But another, you know, a pinup style of Jason Kelce. Somebody's got to help me with that. I don't get it. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Like, there's not a man outside of my family that I would do that. Because we talk about this all the time. Like, we don't know. Like, let's say you were going to do that. It was like Steph Curry, right? Steph Curry seems like, we talk about this all the time. It seems like Steph Curry would be the perfect CEO for your company or the perfect, endorser for your product or whatever and all that kind of stuff. And he's the family man and has the kids and revolutionized basketball. And, you know, he seems to be no wrong, but I don't know that Steph Curry, you know, doesn't go home and, you know, spank his dog really hard. And it's like, man, that Steph Curry, I had no idea. Like, I don't know. I'm just coming up with something that wouldn't, you know, be overly offensive, even though that might be, but I'm simply saying like, I don't know Steph Curry in that personal way. So I'm not putting Steph Curry in my body because what if it comes out like years from now that this, that, or the other? Now it's like, I got to get that thing covered up, man. How do I cover that thing up? You know, I'm not getting a tattoo of someone that I don't know very, very well. Like it's got to be a like family member or something that means something to me. Like somebody's going to look at that and go, and you're going to get old and it's going to get, you know, it's going to be this ugly, wrinkly tattoo. And you're like, well, who is that? Oh, it's this guy named Jason Kelce. He was a center for the Eagles. And people are going to look at you like, huh? Weird. This is weird. Anyway, you can desecrate your body however you want. You do you. I say that all the time. You do you. That's fine. You want to desecrate your body? That's fine. I don't care. You have 22? Wow, that's amazing. 22. See, that's the thing. They are addictive. I talk, my wife says that all the time. She's like, are you done with those? And I'm like, I think, but God, if something happens, like I would, the only way I would do it now is it's got to be something significant. You know what I mean? Like, okay, it's something I'd want to remember. But then again, I do have a memory, but I could lose it. You know, sometimes you'd think the way that I do this show that I've lost my mind and my memory. So, you know, maybe it's like, oh, I want to remember that. And then I put it on my body. It's like, oh, yeah. So if, you know, something happens to me, it's like, Lund can't remember anything, but he's got those things on his, you know, he's got tattoos on his body. So he remembers. It's like, yeah, okay. Oh, man. All right. Let's see. Anything else today? Any questions, comments, thoughts? Did I hit everybody super today? Good show for a Friday. And we'll be back for Bottom of the Pint plus a Saturday show tomorrow. Thanks to Fuji. Says Bottom of the Pint still on for tonight? Yes. Mark says Randy Rodriguez adrenaline had him overthrowing yesterday. I would agree with that. I think he'll get back on board, but he's not going to be able to pitch tonight. for the big matchup between Yamamoto and Webb. That was 43 pitches. The Nutter, what are your thoughts on Ohtani joining the rotation? Ask that question. We'll see. If I was the Dodgers, I would be like, this guy's a pretty good hitter. Don't know if I want to mess with that. So anyway, there you go. Let's see. I love this. If you had to get a tattoo, would you choose Steph Curry's face on Jeff Galba's body or Jeff Galba's face on Steph Curry's body? Oh my God. Seriously? Probably her face. Probably her face. I don't know, man. That's a tough question. That is a really tough question. It would take a lot for me to get one now. I'd have to be something really significant. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about it for a while. All right, there you go. That is episode 164. If you missed anything, you're in luck. You could go back to the beginning of the show. Any questions, comments, thoughts, put them right underneath here. Or I'm often on X at John Lund Radio, so you can hit me up there as well. We will be back for bottom of the pint tonight between the Dodgers and the Giants, so keep those alerts on, and you know when we'll pop back on. Plus, we'll put a bunch of stuff out later on today as well that you may have missed. Anything else we've missed today? I think we played everything for you for episode 164. Please make sure you subscribe to the channel, John Lund Unleashed. Please, before you get out of here, if you just do me that favor of hitting the like button so that the algorithm likes us, also please get those alerts on. If you'd also head over to the Bay Area Sports Collective so you can check that out as well. Lots of shows going on today, so then you will not miss anything there. Thanks for watching today on Instagram, on X, on Facebook, LinkedIn, however you've been watching today. Thank you very much. In moments, we will put this onto a podcast as well. Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast, we'll have it there as well. Everybody have a great rest of your Friday, and we'll be back for Bottom of the Pint tonight between the Dodgers and the Giants.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!